NZ On Air Music presents Long Player.
This is Cam, and let me start that again. This is Cam, and we're talking about my new album, Experience Life, under the alias Beneficiary 41412719 3.
So it's your second album. Was it your second album? Actually, you should clarify that. Kind of.
Well, kind of. Yeah, it's my second full-length album under this alias. You wouldn't be able to see it because I've since removed them from Bandcamp, but there's three other EPs that I have released before all of this stuff. And that was kind of like more kind of just noise, whereas the album I Care was kind of like the first foray into what I choose to call bedroom black metal.
Bedroom black metal. Okay, it's a good name. I like that. I Care was like the first bedroom black metal album. Do you feel like Experience Life is like also bedroom black metal to you, or is it kind of a different thing?
Nah, it is. It's even I Care is like, that's a tenuous descriptor for the album. I would call it that because it has to be called something, I suppose, when you listen to it. There's only like probably less than half of the tracks are actually like have a blast beat in them and could be considered black metal. And that's kind of like by my design, I suppose. I am definitely constantly conflicted on whether I should attempt to make a traditional style black metal album or whether I should follow my heart and do whatever the hell it is that I do, which is kind of just like vibes-based black metal, I suppose. Not really following the necessary conventions of it. It's more conceptual than genre specific or classic. I put a lot of bass music themes throughout it because obviously I make bass music under a different alias, and dance music and stuff like that, and that is a pretty integral part of the project despite it being not particularly at the forefront, I guess. Yeah, to me, this alias is kind of like an amalgamation of what I can do in the most rungus and fast and loose kind of way I know how. Cracking it open a cold one is a track for me that is kind of like, I think it pretty well encapsulates the vibe for the whole album. And yeah, like the melodic elements throughout this whole release are definitely a new thing for me. And I'm not, I guess when I was writing I Care, I wasn't super confident with writing melody. Did the odd one here and there, and I think by the time I got to writing Experience Life, I felt slightly more capable doing that. I don't have any kind of training in terms of playing any instruments, so I don't really know scales and all that jazz. I've learned slightly more in the past year, but I guess I was kind of like slightly more confident putting what little I knew into it this time around. And like in terms of the piano use throughout the album, that's just, I don't really know what the reason is for that. I think I just started to enjoy using it a lot more. Part of it maybe because I've also started using Logic alongside Ableton, and the pianos in Logic are like so much better than the ones in Ableton. So that it was finally kind of like available for me to do that in a way that is like pleasing to me, not necessarily convincing. Like I think only one of these tracks actually has a real piano in it, and the rest of them are all synthesized pianos or sample based piano.
But yeah, I couldn't tell which one's which. They all sound pretty good to me.
Oh hell yeah. A side note on cracking open a cold one is that the sample at the end of it is the very first sample I ever downloaded.
Hey, really?
It's not really a sample, but it's like an album of like some old like chants. It was the very first thing I downloaded when I first downloaded Soulseek many, many years ago.
True.
And and it's just like traveled with me on all my computers ever since, because the whole album is just really good, like sample material.
What follows is a rough guide only for some of the chants published in various ONA manuscripts. It must be remembered that the style of singing, that is tempo, volume, basic expression, depends entirely upon the individual and the unique circumstances of the rite in which the chant may be performed. However, it is most effective if all the chants are sung with dirges. Firstly, the Diabolos.
Yeah, actually, this lying through clenched teeth is not my vocals. That's a really elaborate noise oscillator patch that I built originally so that I could sketch out the vocals in tracks so that I could then record them later, because I'm just like a nervous guy and I have to record all of my vocals when there's no one else in the house. And so that's just like a really elaborate noise oscillator patch made when analog, or like a few different instances of analog on Ableton. I used it sketching, and I've used it for a live show that I played. And I think I just left it in there because I was like, it's actually a funny concept to me to just play the vocals as if they're vocals, but they're not. It was really entertaining to do live because it's like playing pretty harsh music and doing vocals like this, but then in reality I'm just pressing the K key on my laptop behind the bit on the stage, which
that's
is
so pretty funny.
That brought me a lot of joy, to be honest, but
it's actually sick as fuck.
Alphabet Soup is definitely an amalgamation of a whole lot of different genres. I used to be like a mad metalhead and listen to heaps of black metal and DSBM and all that kind of stuff. But I honestly don't listen to that music like at all anymore, which is funny, I suppose, because it makes it like I'm working with like the memories of influence kind of thing, which maybe is why a lot of the influences seem kind of vague, because I'm not like referencing this to anything and I'm not listening to the kind of music that I'm making. I spent a number of years making noise music and dark ambient music before kind of foraying into this kind of stuff. And I think generally that's been pretty, I don't know if I'd say helpful or whatever, but it's like those tones are very familiar and I know what I know how to get to them and I know what I'm looking for in them, and which is mainly helpful because I can get to them really quickly, more than anything else. And that's kind of the aim of the game with a lot of this music, as I've said, is just getting it there as soon as possible. Hills of White definitely does have the metal vibe and the dancey vibe very present throughout it. And I think for me, it's not necessarily like a super obvious pairing. I do feel like I'm quite interested in bringing dubstep into black metal, but I'm not super interested in bringing black metal into dubstep. I don't know if I can really say why I have that distinction. It's purely just what I... what I want out of it, I guess, as well as, I don't know. Dubstep sometimes is already just like plenty harsh. And that is also like not really the kind of dubstep I like. I'm more into the more like spacious, dub-focused dubstep. So I'm not really chomping at the bit to bring black metal vocals and more like heavily distorted bullshit into it. But yeah, I guess over the period of making Experience Life, the dubstep that I was making, I was kind of like focusing on, I was trying really hard to kind of hone in on bounce, I guess, and like trying to have things be slightly less rigid and have a little bit more of like a push and pull in the rhythm. And I think Hills of White kind of holds that kind of, that wish within it. Because definitely. Like, you know, a typical black metal has next to no bass anywhere. And yeah, I think, I mean, it's hard to say really. I guess like when I produce, obviously when you make dance music and you're playing around and you come across a tone that sounds really good in a dance format, it's pretty hard to look past it. It's pretty hard for me to like make a sound and then be like, I'll save this patch and do it later or whatever. I'm always just like, let's try and fit this in here. And potentially that's what happened with Hills of White, whereas I was trying to, maybe I was, and this is pure, I don't remember, but I could well have been trying to synthesize a bass guitar and then got it to that point and was just like, honestly, that's kind of hard. Maybe I'll try and fit this into this instead rather than keep laboring over making an instrument that is going to take more work. A new guy's interlude is particularly driven by two samples. One is a recording of construction work from my old flat in Newtown, and the other is a recording of cars driving past on a wet day when I lived in Avondale in Auckland. And those two samples kind of like create a large portion of the atmosphere in the track. And the like the hollow, the kind of hollow notes that you refer to are, honestly, the way I achieve that kind of sound is pretty much just put like a really small reverb on a really high wet setting. So I have the room really small and the size, the room really small and the decay really small, but then I have it incredibly wet, with a really short pre-delay. So it's kind of just, it's more of like a reamp than an effect. And then I just kind of like, EQ before and after, scooping out any of the tones, any of the frequencies that feel like they're adding too much body to it, which is usually kind of like 600 hertz below, like 200 to 600 hertz. They're like really good at adding that kind of like boxy sound. I do own a guitar that I got from the tip shop in Wellington that's missing the two bottom strings, which I play. Which track is it in? I honestly can't remember. Somewhere within this I played that. But yeah, as I said, I don't play the guitar, so it's much easier for me to play on a synthesized guitar because then I can just play it like any other instrument.
Yeah, true. Yeah. It sounds it sounds like, I don't know, it's definitely like, I'd say like one of my favorite tracks on the album for sure. Yeah, that and Bank Spinach in the Morning as well. It's very different tracks, but both of them like hit real hard.
Yeah, because Cold as Fuck Hour of Power was, I mean, I can only assume from the name, this is one of the only tracks in the album that this was the working title as well. And so I've got a pretty strong feeling of where and when I made this track. And I believe it would have been when I was living in Wellington and my partner Liv and I at the time would get really mad when we were both working in the studio and we'd realize that we'd accidentally missed the Hour of Power and we were both broke as fuck. So that was the only time we were willing to heat our house. And so we'd be sitting in the studio and then be like, oh shit, we've only got like 6 minutes left, and just like quickly blast the heater real, real hard, and then be like, oh damn, that was our chance to get this house warm and now we're like, we're screwed.
That makes make sense now. I was thinking like I didn't like make the connection between the Hour of Power meaning like the hour of like free electricity. So that must be an old track then.
Yeah, one of the older ones for sure. I think there's two tracks. Cold as Fuck Hour of Power and Soylent Hill are slightly older than the other ones. I think I made those two relatively quickly after finishing iCare. By relatively, I mean like within the year afterwards. I think those two are the only ones that are slightly older. Exponential Morning is actually the track that I wanted to make like the featured track on the Bandcamp. It's definitely my favorite track in the album, but I felt like the featured track on Bandcamp is strange, you know, like you have to feel like it has to kind of encapsulate the whole album, otherwise people will listen to it and then be like anyway and move on. And I felt like Exponential Morning wouldn't capture quite so much interest, but yeah, that I love that track. I recorded that on my mate's piano out in Diamond Harbour. That piano is phenomenal. Someone who has no idea what they're doing on a piano was able to make it sound half decent. So that's a testament to how good that piano is. I was actually did the recording when I was over in Diamond Harbour, staying at a different friend's house, and then was just like, oh, actually, guys, I got to go over to my other friend's house, who they weren't there, because I got to do some recording of their piano while they're out, and just brought a Zoom recorder and just put a Zoom in the room and noodled away on the piano for an hour or so, and then chopped out what became Exponential Morning. Yeah, it's a great track, in my opinion. I really like it. It's obviously just the piano and piano sound gorgeous, so calling it a great track is funny because it's just one instrument. But yeah, I really like it. I think it is, I think it's pretty indicative of what I'm like when I feel a certain way, you know? And yeah, usually that feeling's like pretty hard to escape, and that was me attempting to kind of get that out. Thank you. as I said earlier, this, I was trying to kind of like, you know, increase the breadth of emotion throughout the album. And so when I wrote Rise and Pine, it is definitely like a, it's a, yeah, as you say, it's like a, it's looking up kind of a vibe, you know, like Banks Peninsula Morning is pretty, it's pretty rough. And you can tell that I was like hurting quite a lot when I wrote that. Whereas Rise and Pine is a little bit more, yeah, maybe it's not so bad. Or maybe not even that it's not so bad, but that it's like a, I'll get through this. And there's still something worth living for around here. And it features a recording of a, like a pipe, or like a, I honestly don't know what, it's probably like a, knowing Wellington, it's probably like an effluent pipe or something. But it's just like a big metal pipe that goes out into the ocean on the south coast in Pōneke. And I used to go out there like heaps and heaps. And before I was leaving the city, I wanted to get a recording of the pipe because there's like a hole in the top of it and you can stick your head inside it and you can like hear the water sloshing at both ends. Or like, I don't know if it's even both ends, but like you can hear the water sloshing through it and it sounds super like cavernous oil canny. So I got that recording and it's been Paul Stretched. Shout out to Paul Stretch. Definitely a bit of an MVP throughout the Beneficiary music. For those who don't know, it's just a really great audio stretching algorithm that was invented by this guy called Paul for Audacity, I think. But yeah, it's kind of like the sun is peeking through the trees in this track. And there's a little bit more hope. That's kind of the vibe for sure. You hit the nail on the head. I think they do work really well in tandem. The sequencing of this whole album was an interesting task. Because it is like, you know, there's like 3 to 6 different vibes throughout it, and trying to simultaneously make it cohesive, but also like, as I said, like keep it human and keep it like, keep it eclectic feeling. Not just like, I want people to be able to sink into the album, but I don't really want people intellectualizing it, you know. Like I don't think it's necessary. Just enjoy it and feel how you feel when you listen to it. You don't have to like don't analyze my work, goddamn. It's not made to be analyzed. It's made for me. I don't even make it for other people to listen to it, you know, like I do it for me, and I put it out because other people enjoy it sometimes, and it keeps it, it gets it off my back. Thank you.
Life on the Precipice I was just gonna ask you, like, what do you think about Dungeon Synth? Like, because it's just like, that's just straight up a Dungeon Synth track to me. That's how I hear
yeah.
it.
Yeah, no, it totally is just a Dungeon Synth track. I love Dungeon Synth. Which is awesome. I think it's great. And I listen to it and enjoy it often enough. I did this. The funny thing with Life on the Precipice is that this was pretty much me trying to make a Have a Nice Life tune.
True.
If you know that artist, like,
I do, yeah.
Yeah, I don't really listen to them very much anymore, but I don't know how, but somewhere along the way of being in the studio and working on this album, I just kind of like, I just wanted to do a track that was me attempting to kind of hit that vibe. The funny thing is that I didn't end up recording vocals on it because it's just a nervous person who didn't want to record vocals within the house and then never really got around to it. And then, you know, like, I'm not a singer. And Have a Nice Life does like so many different vocal melodies and layering and stuff like that. And it's a challenge that I'm keen to take on at some stage. But by the time it came to finishing that track, I wasn't ready. So I didn't do that.
Fair.
But yeah, it's definitely like, it's a triumph. It's a song of triumph for sure. And like, yeah, it's kind of like the horns are harking you back, you know, they're welcoming you home. Such.
Interesting. I feel that for sure. Definitely is triumphant. So much of Dungeon Synth is like weirdly triumphant.
Oh, totally.
I love it's that, like, it just like manages to tap into that, where like it's kind of not necessarily from black metal, but like it's kind of a counterpart to black metal, and it just like just manages to like shake off all that, like, I don't know, stuff that black metal has that limits it so much, I feel. And I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I mean, my favorite track in every black metal album is the Dungeon Synth tune. Like, yeah, it's sure. always, they're always so so spacious and hollow sounding, and they kind of like, they hit all of the places that I want now out of that kind of music, I guess. Like, you know, like, I'm still full of fucking despair and shit, but I'm also super chill. And I feel like Dungeon Synth, kind of like a lot of Dungeon Synth tracks that are found in a black metal album, I just enjoy a lot more and can see myself a lot more in them and find them a lot more like cathartic, because they're more like contemplation rather than exasperation, I guess. And that is kind of where I'm at, I suppose, or that's where I'm trying to get to, is like, yeah, you know, I don't know, shit's all pretty whack, but I'm not super keen to like sit in that. I'd rather, not that I'm like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what I'm saying. Like, I'm not.
No, I'm not... I get you, sure. Yeah.
Something Guns Out is on some sunny day type shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's definitely like a road trip on a sunny day kind of tune. And you're like, you drive in and you're looking out the window and it's real nice. And you look over at your homie who's sitting in the front seat and they're like having a good time. And you're going somewhere that you know, you're looking forward to or something. I guess like an anecdote that it reminds me of is when I was young in high school, my friends and I would all pile into my tiny car and we'd drive to Whanganui to go to gigs over there. And because I grew up in Palmerston North, and I've got so many memories of that, of just like, it's a gorgeous day and you're going just for like some gig. And, you know, I think at that time we were probably listening to fucking Dive or something like that.
True.
Some kind of jangly-ass guitar type shit. And I guess this was kind of me just like recreating that memory. And yeah, I think that's pretty much, I could be pretty confident that's pretty much what I was trying to do when I made this track, was just like recreate that feeling. The album art for both albums has been like a collaborative process, predominantly by my good friends AJ and Eva. AJ does all my script, which is tight as fuck, and Eva does the photography and the design work. It's definitely like strongly black metal inspired aesthetically. The first album, I Care, was a funny one because we got it down to three different versions of the cover, each with a different image as well. And two of them were like much more traditional looking, and kind of like a monochromatic style. But I ended up deciding on the one that ultimately got used for IKEA because of how slightly more unconventional it was. It was a little bit more indicative of the kind of unconventional black metal that I was presenting in the album. Experience Life is obviously, it's set up in a tape format, because I'm gonna get some tapes made. The shoot that we did there is we did in the on the south coast in Pōneke. There's a, when you walk along towards Red Rocks, there's like a little path that ducks up into the valley, and we followed it up there, which was a really funny process because my idea for it was that we would that I would be underwater, and then there would we would pour some like black water upstream from me, and the black water would be like going over top of me, and the shot would be in the same like from above. But then when we got to the location, the water like wasn't anywhere near deep enough. As well as the process for making the water black was way harder than we thought. Because I just bought like a bag of coal, and we just like smashed the coal up real hard, and then just like put that in a bucket and like made water black like that. And then like literally while we were driving away, we were like, we totally could have just gotten Indian ink.
Hard, yeah.
We were looking for like, you know, something that I'm happy to put in the water, and coal was my stupidest idea. But we totally should have just used Indian ink. But yeah, so like the image in the background is not quite what I originally had planned for it, but I'm pretty happy with how it came out. And Eva totally slayed it on the design work for it. It's a long process for sure, getting the artwork done and getting it right and feeling like it's representative of the album is important. And yeah, I don't know. I do just really enjoy the black metal aesthetic, regardless of whether it's associated with black metal. So I think I'd probably be using a similar aesthetic on any kind of release that I did that it vaguely fit with. I'm not about to put like black metal script over top of my like dub and reggae releases. Though that would be kind of funny, but Stick Around and Find Out is a funny track. In my opinion, yeah, I crunched that track to all shit, eh? Say hi to the limiter for me, because this is like the bass in this track is absolutely destroying the limiter. This kind of music is like, in my opinion, it's not supposed to be good. Like, obviously I'm trying to make enjoyable, it's supposed to be enjoyable, but it doesn't have to be good.
I get that. And, yeah,
and I live by that with this kind of music. Like, I think, you know, like when I make dance music, I'm gonna agonize over it and make sure it sounds as good as I possibly can. Whereas this kind of music, it doesn't need that, and I don't want it to have that. And I am perfectly happy for people to listen to it and be like, whoa, that sounds like shit right now. Because if it sounds like shit, then it's because I made it that way, you know. Like this album was run through tape like three times in places.
Oh, true. Okay, interesting.
So like, yeah, it's pretty eaten up, and like, you know, there's artifacts popping up throughout everything, and particularly the last four tracks before the outro. Four tracks before the outro, like the bass sounds pretty bad. I could definitely do a much better job than that, but it's not supposed to. It doesn't have to play on a sound system. You're only going to listen to it probably, honestly, just in headphones. I don't know if many people really, I mean, I'm sure people do listen to this kind of stuff on speakers out loud, but like for me, I wouldn't. So I kind of create it for the listening environment that I would personally consume it in.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just in headphones, because it's personal listening. It's not a collective listening experience, in my opinion, this kind of music, or like this album. Not to say that I've performed it live, but yeah, it's not really made for that environment, and I wasn't, like, I've never really planned to perform it live. We'll be right back. there's Silent Hill samples all throughout it.
Can you tell me about that?
Oh, it's just a great game. And it's got the right atmosphere for the style of music and all of the sound work in it. It's real good. It's real spooky and open-ended and eerie. If I remember rightly, Silent Hill's got like some vocal samples in it, and it's got like the door closing sound in it, maybe some of the footstep sounds in it. I think it might have like one of the monster sounds in it somewhere. Yeah, it's just a great game. And then obviously it's like also referencing Jandroid's Dream of Electric Sheep, or Blade Runner, if you call it that. Soylent Greens, which is, you know, like the idea of a food that you eat just to survive. And it's like there's no like enjoyment in it. It's pure sustenance, feeding the flesh kind of a vibe.
Yeah.
Which I feel I get that sometimes. Sometimes, particularly when I'm not feeling so good, my appetite is like next to nil, and I do purely just need to feed the flesh in order to stop my stomach from being sore. It's not a good feeling. So it seems crazy to me that people would actively go for that. But yeah, Soylent Hill is, yeah, again, crunched as all hell, and it's got that bass influence from my other kind of music in it. Honestly, like, I wrote in my notes here that this song definitely sounds the worst.
Oh, you reckon?
Yeah, I think this one is like mastered pretty rough. And like, obviously I'm happy with that, otherwise I wouldn't have put it out, but like the bass is, as a dance music producer as well, is fucking dreadful, man.
I need to get out of here.
I definitely wouldn't be playing this one on a rig. It would sound like absolute mud.
I really like it. It's one of my favorites, I'd say.
Oh, hell yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can be pretty hard to leave some of those habits behind when I'm making this kind of music.
Yeah.
Not that I necessarily try to, but it's like, you know, like when you spend X amount of days a week making reggae, and then you're like, today I'm gonna make black metal, it's pretty hard not to just end up with like a whole lot of different synth effects going on, and every once in a while it gets a little bit out of hand, but I don't really mind. I think it's part, like I think this alias is supposed to be like representative of me. As best I can, I think, like
as a whole, like all the music that you make,
yeah, or just like me as a person.
Right, yeah,
I think it's like I said, that I make this music for me, and I do, but I think like the only people that properly kind of comprehend the music are people that know me really, like people that know me. I'm not sure if I quite mean that, but I think it's like I think you get a lot more out of this album if you know who I am, and like
it makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot more sense.
Thank you.
Is absolutely me just talking about like my two aliases and they are kind of like two characters within me at all times, you know. It's very funny to me when I go out and play a reggae set and people were like, wow, that was great, blah blah blah, do you make music? And I was like, yeah, I make reggae and dubstep, but I also make black metal. And people were like, what the hell?
Yeah,
and that makes me laugh a lot. And I think, you know, you wouldn't necessarily expect those two genres to be coming out of the same person. But this track was kind of me trying to marry those two together. I think this was the first time I made a track planning for it to be like that. Like I went into the studio as Zeroplus, trying to kind of like create a track for Beneficiary rather than, like, we weren't in the studio at the same time, you know?
Right, okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Zeroplus got the brief.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a really heavily affected recording. There's a series of cruise ships that come into Ahinoho Littleton Port called the Princesses. So there'll be like the something princess, yada yada. And when they leave the port at 6 p.m., they sing a little song over their foghorn. And that's the song that you can hear in this outro. And I just love it. It's great when there's like fog captured inside the hills and you're like sitting inside or sitting outside having a ciggy or whatever, and then you just hear this like booming foghorn play a little dinky little song. I really like it. It's super eerie and like and cool. And this was a recording of the first time I record, like, finally managed to actually record it. And I just had a whole lot of friends over at the time, and as soon as it started playing, we just like ran outside and I recorded it on my phone. And so obviously there's everyone like whooping and hollering and cheering for it. And
Yeah,
it's kind of like the outro is just a bit of it's just me saying cheers, you know?
Yeah, so you were saying that you are planning some merch for the album.
Yeah, so at the moment there's some long sleeve tees up on my Bandcamp, black on black or black on white, which are pretty cool. There's also, in the very near future, if not before this gets uploaded to the radio, I'll be releasing a scent or a perfume that my friend Nathan of Body has made. It's a super strong oil extract. It was a really cool process. I went into his studio, pretty much just described to them what I was trying to achieve with the album. Ultimately, I'll get some cassettes done as well.
That was Totally Wired